Mic'd Up, Our Women Entrepreneurs is brought to you by Scottish Edge and is supported by the Royal Bank of Scotland. More details on Royal Bank of Scotland's accredited support for women in business a little later. Hello everyone and welcome to Mic'd Up with me, Alison Walker. My second podcast series is all about women entrepreneurs succeeding with their businesses here in Scotland. Women from all backgrounds are running all sorts of businesses all over the country, and it's inspiring to hear their stories. In this episode, I'm in Glasgow, in the east end of Glasgow to be exact, to have a chat with Lisa Lawson, who is the founder in 2011 of Dear Green Coffee, a business born out of a passion for coffee and the environment. Great to meet you, Lisa. Thank you for taking part in Mic'd Up. We're actually in the roasting and the bean area. I can see loads of sacks of coffee beans. Wonderful, wonderful smell. I know you've had a very, very busy smell. It's now quieter with the machines off at the end of the day. Tell us a little bit about just what happens during the course of a day inside this room.
Sure, yeah, it's been far too noisy earlier for you to come in here. So we've got beans being packed, we've got roasters on, fans are on, the doorbell's constantly going with pallets arriving and parcels getting collected and delivered. Non-stop, but definitely the most tranquil part of the day for the coffee
So there's no shop, it's like a working factory, I suppose, almost,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so, sort of a little miniature factory. Yeah, although we do click and collect orders, people can come to our door and people can seek us out, and they do, and they find us and they come buy some fresh beans and arrive here, or click and collect online and collect the order as well.
Now we're here in, 2023. You started out in 2011.
Crazy.
Take us back, if you can, to those early days and a bit about where the idea of getting involved in coffee came from.
Sure, yeah. It's funny thinking back, really. It was such a different time. I was younger for a start. Loads of energy, loads of excitement and passion for coffee. An interest that I'd had much earlier on, actually, from an experience I had backpacking in Australia. So I got there in the year 2000, got a job in a coffee roastery very randomly, and completely fell in love with coffee, learned an awful lot about it. I stayed there for 3 years working in coffee in Australia and New Zealand.
That was like an apprenticeship if you look back, wasn't it?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. And I was working for a startup business that then went on to be a global business. So it was a great experience working with a startup, but then also to see the success that it went on to have, and for me to be the first employee. It was really quite something. It was an exciting time as well, being in Australia. It was the Olympics, it was a millennium, it was just a cool time with, loads of great things going on, and a huge learning curve for me when I was in my early 20s. I came back to Glasgow. I worked in wine for 7 years because I couldn't really find anywhere that was anywhere like what I'd experienced. And then I got to the point that I thought, well, yes, I've got to do it then for myself.
But it sounds as if it was quite innovative, even in 2011, because the coffee revolution has probably maybe been in the last 10 years in Scotland, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think, to be right at the start of that was really cool. That was really exciting. I could see, I've been following the coffee industry around the world, via the internet, which wasn't what we know it to be these days, but there was still, different websites and different roasteries that I followed in the States and Australia, and there were some opening up in London. The World Barista Championship happened in London in 2010, and I went down there to go and to hang out with some Aussie coffee friends that I hadn't seen for years, and I think that just sparked something at that point. I was like, okay, this is happening now in the UK, it's happening in London. There was probably about four roasteries in England that I kind of looked towards as inspiration. I'd worked as a chef and I'd worked in fine dining restaurants, and it always frustrated me that I could never get a good coffee at the end of a meal. I can go into a cafe, something that's called a cafe, their main product's coffee, and they don't, they buy in the cakes and they buy terrible coffee beans. I could never really, you know, I couldn't find this quality aspect that I was looking for.
And generally you find if there's a need, if you think there's a need, then you think, well, how can I fill that need? If this is, if I can't find it, nobody else can. But that's a big leap, Lisa, from thinking there's a need and thinking there's to setting up a business, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, I suppose I could see a little gap in the market, and but then also I was just really ready for it. I had worked as a wine rep, so I had lots of contacts in hospitality, so people who, you know, who would buy from me. And I, you know, I knew I was a hard worker. Those people wanted to invest in me, which gave me, I didn't accept any investment, but it gave me confidence that if they thought I could do it, maybe I could do it. So that's kind of where it came from, the start of it all. And yeah, it was a lot of hard work, but quite exciting time and a learning curve. I think I made all my mistakes before anybody else really knew I was making mistakes, because there wasn't an established specialty coffee industry here.
But what about the whole business aspect that goes round it all, the umbrella of that? How did you take that on?
I think it's just grown over time. So we've maybe grown with like one extra staff member.
That's another member of staff disappearing for the day after
Anna,
a long day.
Our head roaster, just leave it.
Oh, she got a head roaster. Now that's an impressive title.
Good, isn't it?
A head roaster.
So yeah, we've just added on an extra staff member every year, pretty much. And obviously quite lean in the pandemic years and it's come back around from that. And I guess you just learn through growth. You sort of, you know, we went through a phase of extreme growth where we're doubling our turnover every year.
And it was fast at the start, was
exactly,
it?
Exactly. Yeah. And you're trying to keep up with yourself, and then you realise that you have to learn a bit in order to grow again. So even just, you know, by having a B Corp certification.
Can you explain that? What's that?
Sure, yeah. So B Corp is an international movement and an organisation which, I guess, supports businesses to fully have an impact. So it's businesses that are engaged with having an impact in terms of their social and environmental responsibility, and B Corp forms are, I guess, like resources and a template and creates an assessment on you can then be scored and become officially a certified B Corporation, and that's really just been audited completely for full environmental and social responsibility. So, you know, I've always seeked out resources that help me grow as well, and B Corp one of those for me. I think I get to a point of frustration of like, oh, you know, I feel like I'm doing all the right things, and I like to do things by the book, but is it right, or is it just following the norm? And I like to shake things up and not follow the norm, and I suppose I've chosen the path, you know, that's less tread by others. And
I mean, this goes back to the business aspect of running a business as
exactly,
well.
Exactly.
Which you've obviously learned a bit more of as the years have gone on.
Yeah. And then environmentally as well, I think we've always been environmentally aware, I like to term it, but we weren't measuring anything. We didn't really have any science-based facts around good practices that we were doing, but we could always say, hey, we do X, Y, and Z, and it's better for our business. And now, you know, we've actually measured our carbon footprint, and, you know, I've learned a lot again from the B Corp assessment, more so than, you know, constant emails that land in your inbox that you're having to subscribe to then unsubscribe, and there's far too much information, and there's a lot of greenwashing, and trying to make sure I have the correct information to move forward with all the time. It's difficult when you want to follow a path sometimes, something you're really passionate about, which originally was coffee, and then it's about people, and it's making sure the environmental practices are sound within the business, because I'm also passionate about that, and about people having a really good employment experience, because I had a few bad ones.
Yeah, I read that before I came to talk to you. I read, you know, that you'd had your challenges there. Can you give an example of some of the things that happened? Or?
Yeah, you know, I had one really horrific experience when I had written warnings, and luckily I have a very close friend who's an employment lawyer, and she wrote a response, and all three of them were retracted, and eventually I was going to go to industrial tribunal, and then I was left, and it was just a really horrible bullying situation. Now your business doesn't exist and mine does, so you know, I don't want to talk about all these experiences. But I guess, you know, I did a hotel school degree and wrote essays about being in hospitality and long hours and low pay and bad conditions, yet still love the industry because it's an incredible industry to be in. It's got so much adrenaline, great people.
Everything so, always boils down to people in the end, yeah. Anyway, doesn't it? I'm intrigued about that first step. I mean, we're inside here and I can see, you know, bags and bags of coffee beans. I mean, do you remember getting your first load of coffee beans from abroad and thinking, you know, is it that kind of scenario at the start?
Yeah, I remember the day the roaster turned up, and that was quite scary. I was literally on my own and it was arriving to a little studio just off the Clyde, just across the Clutha in Glasgow. And I had measured the roaster and measured the doorway and it was going to fit by a millimetre.
My goodness, you must have been on edge.
Yeah, completely petrified. Like, you know, I just bought this roaster that was, you know, already had credit card debt and student loan debt. And I thought, well, might as well get into more debt and just see if this works. So I got like what I referred to as four strong friends to be there that day. One of them had the ability to take a door frame if that was required, and luckily it wasn't. Yeah, but you know, that was so scary. And then I, you know, just learning about fitting gas and the flue, and I literally just pushed a brick out the side and shoved a flue out and hoped the council wouldn't come along and tell me to close down. I had a month-to-month rent arrangement, and this piece of kit that I just paid £17,000 for.
And when did you think, had you always thought, I want to be sustainable, I want to be do this ethically, I want to do all the right things? Was that very much the concept right from the start?
Do you know, I don't even think it was a plan. It was just something within my being that I wouldn't want to do it any other way. It was never written. Never written a business plan. I thought, I just sort of, you know, when the first person came to work for me, why would I not pay them the living wage? That's preposterous. Why would I pay someone less than what they need to live on? And then, you know, environmental decisions and about sustainability, and sustainability is just such a massive topic. I sort of hate the words, but I know it's the buzzword. So, yeah, I guess in terms of doing things environmentally, we always sold every sack for £1 online. I have done since the day we started the business, and people always want used coffee sacks for something or other. And sometimes we build up a little of them, which we have at the moment, about 100, and then suddenly someone will just buy 100 online for some project somewhere.
Where do you get the knowledge? Where did you, and you probably know now, where did you get the knowledge to source your coffee beans?
So I worked with one importer initially. There were only two that I could find in the UK. Now there are hundreds. And there was one that wouldn't sell me less, I can't remember if it was like less than 10 sacks. They would only sell me one full pallet of coffee, or one full pallet of one bean. I can't remember, so I only had one choice to go with. Mm-hmm. So another importer set up not long after I did, and it was just like a breath of fresh air. All the questions I had were answered. Got to go to origin, and then from there the learning started and developed, and I just know what questions to ask. And when we choose a coffee, you know, there's different phases we've gone through of, like, we're always trying to buy from the same farms every year. So, for example, we buy from a Colombian women's cooperative in Cauca, in Popayán, in Colombia. We've bought from for maybe 6 years. And this year we're told possibly we can't, from the exporter, importer, we possibly can't get that coffee. So sometimes you think, oh, we're doing the right thing by having repeat purchase practices and policies because we've learned that's better. Then ultimately we're far too small.
But then those women, those women who are working on that farm for 6 years knew that you were going to be taking their coffee, so that was regular.
There, I've met them and the relationship is there. So yeah, there's, like, you know, you learn as you go, and mainly we look for seasonal crop. We've done enough training as a team to be trained in sensory to be Q-graders in order to then choose coffee based on its flavour. And we can tell, you know, if it gets a score of, say, you know, 85, 87, 87.
And in terms of your market in Scotland, is that, are all 12 liked by everybody? Are they all as popular as the next one?
The coffee we sell most of is from a farm called Fazenda Pantano in Cerrado in Brazil. So this makes the basis of a lot of our blends. 70% of what we do is sell coffee to wholesale customers, so hospitality, restaurants, bars, cafes. The majority of what they're making is probably milk-based, espresso-based drinks. And a pulped natural Brazil is coffee that just really works very solidly, consistently for that product. So our espresso blend, which is called Goose Dubs after the little lane that we're just next to down by the Clifa.
And your contacts in the hospitality business obviously played a major part in trying to get these wholesale deals done, and that relationship's continued.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think I've lived in a city centre for many years, and I was hanging out in the bars, and I worked in cafes, worked in wine shops all around the West End, and you just sort of get to know people, and people trust you, and you're recommending a wine for them every weekend, and then suddenly you're selling coffee, and they'll buy it from you as well.
Deer Green Coffee. So in Glasgow, I know Deer Green Place, we're close to Glasgow Green. I presume that's part of the reason why.
Yeah, absolutely.
Called it that.
I had a little jotter, I think, in my bag for about 6 months, and I'd meet friends in the pub and I'd come up with another name, what do you think of this one? And eventually I settled on Deer Green, and I don't think the name was in use much at all at the time. People in Glasgow knew what it meant, and the main reason was to get that loyalty, because people didn't know what coffee roasting was, but they knew what Deer Green was, and they liked coffee. So really I was trying to educate, you know, support local was a movement as well, so I was trying to educate people that coffee wasn't Italian, and that should in fact be roasted freshly, and if they were going to go and buy their fresh sourdough bread, or they were going to buy, you know, fresh cakes or anything like that, then they could just also buy fresh coffee. So that was my way to get into the psyche of the locals, I suppose.
in terms of being in Glasgow, I mean, does Glasgow embrace? Did they embrace you and the business quite quickly? How long did that take?
It was quite underground initially, just those in the know, people who knew me. We were based next to the Brigitte, and when South Block launched with lots of, artists, designers, commercial design companies, architects. So I guess there were a lot of people around that were interested in the product, maybe saw, you know, had travelled and knew what good coffee was. And a lot of my customers already followed me from working in wine shops, and it just grew from then.
Sounds like it's been almost quite a natural evolution.
Yeah, it's been quite organic.
Was there a moment where, was there a significant step, like a, not a penny drop moment, but more a moment where you got a really chunky contract and you thought, oh gosh, yeah, that's going to really help us do X, Y, Z. Was there a...
Yeah, I guess we moved to this premises to get our brand new roaster and a second hand one, to have a lease locked in, and yeah, have everything legit. It was kind of like a big shift, which felt, you know, like, a relief, yeah, for sure.
What happened with the role of Scottish Edge in terms of your development of the business?
Yeah, that was about moving to the second roastery that we're in as well. I spent the first 3 years, I think, just saving all the money in the business, because I was kind of petrified I'd lose it all in a flash. And yeah, we just worked super hard, and then we bought the new roaster and we kitted out this premises, which was literally a shell. It was, you know, it was a basement of a warehouse with no services, no walls, no windows, anything. We kitted everything completely out as part of the lease terms. And I made money. And I literally, in a state of desperation, thought, okay, this is the only thing I can do now, I can go to the edge. And there's a lot of offers of help that actually weren't that helpful. So going to the edge, I hadn't quite realised the turning point it was going to give the business. I didn't realise the network it was going to make available to me. Just surrounded by a blanket of positivity.
Yep.
And it was a really wonderful experience. I was so grateful to have won funding round 9. I moved in with no cash flow, but like buckets of enthusiasm and knowledge and
And that must have come over to the Edge team. And that was a key turning point, you think, for the business?
Oh, completely, yeah.
And perhaps it was, you know, a bit of affirmation and confirmation for you personally as well, that you were on the right road.
Yeah, I think so. I remember relaying my figures during my pitch and saying how we doubled and what I'd achieved. And we doubled every year for the first 3 years and what I'd achieved in that time. And there was gasps in the audience. And I didn't know that was right or wrong. I had absolutely no clue what I was doing and whether I was doing it well or not. So you don't really know until you start speaking to people who have that knowledge.
Tell us about the Glasgow Coffee Festival and how that, because you started that off as well, didn't you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so, yeah, because I was based down at the Clyde, the Brigitte was right across the road, great venue. I just thought it would be great to have a coffee festival. I had been to so many. I'd worked at Aroma at the Rocks in Sydney 3 times in the early 2000s. I'd been down to Cafe Culture, the original Cafe Culture in London, and been to various wine fairs over the years as well. The London Coffee Festival had just launched. And I think also there's a subculture in coffee that hadn't reached Glasgow yet, and I was so desperate to have it here and really wanted to be able to understand what I was so in love with. And I kind of saw the Coffee Festival as a vehicle towards that. Was to bring people who are passionate about coffee in Scotland together to be in one place at one time and really to just enjoy that experience but also be able to promote to a customer base about who we are and what we are and what our product is. It started in 2014. The next festival will be our 10th year. And that's continued to grow every year.
And the way coffee has evolved and the way people, I mean, even during the pandemic, people were sitting outside and having coffees that even in the pouring rain during the pandemic. So that the culture is definitely coming, isn't it? We're much more of a coffee culture than we were, say, even 5 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's incredible. The pandemic, we really noticed we went down from 10 staff to 2 staff. And we were literally just fulfilling online orders rather than having wholesale orders because all our customers closed overnight. So we were sending out 250 gram bags to everyone and anyone. And just so many people were experimenting with new coffees, new pieces of coffee equipment. I remember, we were so lean during the pandemic, we just cancelled absolutely all of our outgoing expenses. Operated as leanly as we could to get through it because we didn't know what on earth was going to happen. I remember just taking a bit of a punt and ordering a pallet of grinders and it just went in a flash.
So that's like spreading the joy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what's next? I mean, you've got to this point. I mean, as a business owner, you've got to evolve, you've got to adapt, and who knows what's around the corner. Mm. What are you thinking about? What else you could get involved in?
There's always something. I'm always thinking, plotting. The team has restructured slightly recently. Just really a big advocate of investing and developing the team. The Coffee Festival's the 10th birthday next year. That's a pretty big undertaking. We're looking for a bigger premises. Anyone's listening? We have a big warehouse. So, yeah,
But you don't want to move too far out of the city, do you?
No, not at all. So I think growth is, it's great we've managed to last in this space for so long, but this is your 8th now here, so it's definitely time to have more space and to be able to grow, to have more space to the public. like the bigger thing as well. But you know, I can't. I've always got ideas, and it's
and what about,
changes all the time.
Yeah. And Lisa, what about you as an individual? I mean, what would you tell that younger person, you know, going around Australia in that nature and working with all those coffee beans, you know? Do you see that person as someone quite different, or, you know, compared to who you are now?
Yeah, definitely. I know, I had no idea I was going to do anything like this, I suppose. And maybe I was always a little bit lost, but always just followed my passions. I was never like financially independent, or you know, don't come from a wealthy background. So I've always been a bit hand to mouth as a student and then as a backpacker. So I think, you know, Durban's given me some financial independence and also fed into my desire to travel. I've managed to get around some incredible.
You must have been to some incredible places around the world.
Yeah, I went to Ethiopia earlier this year, and it was my second time there. I think, you know, I'm not as hungry to travel anymore, but I do love an adventure and going to Africa. And I'm also very much about having a trip that's with purpose. So I'm not just going to fly because someone's just invited me to go there. I went to Ethiopia because I had three projects I wanted to visit. And I knew that was, you know, right. I hadn't been anywhere since 2019. I hadn't been on a flight or hardly out of Scotland. So that was a really big deal to do that this year. I think I can't even, I suppose, you know, when I was much younger, I would just save up enough money until I had enough money to go on a flight and have an adventure and not really think about whether I had money to pay my rent the next month. But I've got to a point where I can carve out the next phase much easier.
But it can't just all be about the business. How are you about balancing other aspects of your life, because everybody says it is 24/7 all consuming. It's but they say we love it. We absolutely love it. But at the same time, you've got to.
I think you love it until you burn out. I mean, if you consistently burn out, then you know you have a reality check, and that's certainly what's happened to me. I'm quite disciplined and switching off at the weekends. I'm bad at working like probably every evening of Monday to Friday, so that I can switch off at the weekend.
But you don't need to go to everything and do everything.
Yeah, for sure. So I've definitely learned to say no, and I've learned to ask for help and to find support networks as well, in terms of, you know, I would like plough through loads of HR sites, and now I just go to an HR company
and ask them
for advice. So that's just one example.
Thinking smartly, that isn't it? And, yeah. And that's, again, that's something you learn over the years.
Exactly.
Because women can not be very good at, well, I'll do it myself. And we're a bit like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I started out, there wasn't anyone really to turn to in terms of like coffee knowledge. I spent such a lot of time self-training, just reading, and, you know, going to tastings. And at the time, there'd be like a tasting in London, nowhere else in the UK. I just hop on a train, get to London for 6 o'clock and join this tasting, and crash out my friend's couch in Camden and get the train back up.
Gosh, that's commitment for you, my goodness.
But there was no other resource or way to learn.
And I bet you didn't even think, you probably just did it.
Yeah, exactly, didn't think at all.
Because there wasn't an alternative.
And now, you know, the coffee side of stuff is just, it's available everywhere, and going to a tasting. Glasgow, pretty much, or in Scotland somewhere, at least once a week maybe.
And you started that revolution. here we are, and look at the business. And you should absolutely give yourself a pat on the back. And sometimes women are not very good at doing that.
That's true.
And that's another thing to learn through. You've what an amazing business you've got, and everybody loves it, so well done you.
Oh, thank you so much, and I love it too. May it last and have a legacy for others.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lisa, for chatting to us on Mic'd Up, and it's been lovely. And I'm going to take a little bag of coffee away with me, if that's okay.
Great. I'm more than happy.
And what's it called? Your blend?
Oh, Gustops.
Gustops.
Yes.
I will take a bag and I will sample it. See you.
Okay.
Thank you, Lisa. Our Women Entrepreneurs is supported by the Royal Bank of Scotland, providing accredited specialist support for women in business today and every day. in the form of free help, expertise and guidance. Whether you want to chat with one of the local enterprise managers, are interested in the Accelerator programme, or would benefit from a mentor session on the Women in Business mentoring platform Mentor Match, go to rbs.co.uk/business and search Women in Business to find out more. Meanwhile, keep an eye and an ear out for the next episode of Our Women Entrepreneurs on Mic'd Up, coming soon. Thanks for listening.